This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoen, sitting in for Terry Gross. Last Friday, the Nigerian military government executed writer and civil rights activist Ken Saro-Wiwa and eight other political activists in spite of protests from countries and human rights groups that their lives be spared. They had been found guilty of inciting murder in a trial that had been criticized for flagrant civil rights violations. General Sani Abacha, head of the country's military regime, is now facing international condemnation. Nelson Mandela is leading a campaign to impose a worldwide oil embargo on Nigeria. There have also been calls to freeze the personal assets of General Abacha. Most of the oil deposits are in the southeast region of the country, home to different ethnic groups, including the Ogonis. Shell Oil has been working in Nigeria for 60 years and was the object of local protests 2 years ago in Ogoni land. Ken Saro-Wiwa led those protests against Shell as one of the founders of an environmental group, the Movement of the Survival of the Ogoni People, or MOSOP. We invited Richard Dicker to join us today on Fresh Air to discuss the recent events in Nigeria. Dicker is Associate Counsel for Human Rights Watch. Nigeria is the largest and most populous country in Africa. I asked Dicker what position it holds among other African nations.
Nigeria had, on account of both its population, its size, and its tremendous natural resources, provided a source of inspiration and hope in terms of the potential of African economic development for a number of years. Given the misrule that the country has been subjected to for the last 5 or more years in particular, and the developments since June 1993, I think Nigeria has come more to represent in the eyes of the international community and in Africa more and more broadly a very sad example of misrule by military officials bent on human rights abuse, really diminishing the tremendous natural potential of the country.
Well, one of the leaders of the movement to criticize and to demonstrate against Shell Oil was Ken Saro-Wiwa, the writer and poet who was executed last Friday, and Ogoni himself. He's the founder, who was the founder, of the Movement for the Survival of the Ogoni People. What was this movement about? What did they want?
Well, essentially, the MOSOP, the Movement for the Survival of the Ogoni People, was founded in the early 1990s in response to the environmental degradation of their land and waters, and demanding essentially two things. One, a cessation to the environmentally damaging processes that Shell employed, and also a more equitable system of compensation for those people whose lands were despoiled by the oil company's operations and received very little in return by way of financial resources from Nigeria's central government or from the Rivers State Administration. The region was noticeably lacking in infrastructure or other basic services, even though it was the source of so much of the country's natural wealth and governmental revenue.
What was the impact of the environmental impact of Shell Oil in the Ogoni region?
Well, there was a great deal of devastation of cropland, farmland, poisoning of waterways and fish. There were injuries suffered when there were various accidents and gas flare-ups that frequently happened, both damage to land, water and human life that the Ogoni people experienced as a result of the proximity to environmentally very, very negative oil drilling and refining processes.
This group, the Movement for the Survival of the Ogoni People that Ken Sarawiwa headed up, what kinds of activities, what kinds of demonstrations did they do against Shell oil in Ogoni land?
Well, they engaged in a number of peaceful protest rallies and demonstrations, and that's really where the cycle of violence that culminated in last week's executions began. Protests took place in Ogoni land in proximity to Shell facilities, and Shell decided to summon the support and protection of the River State Internal Security Task Force to protect its facilities in the face of, at the time, basically peaceful protests. This bringing in of the River State Internal Security Task Force led to a campaign of state violence against the Ogoni people that was shocking in both its scope and brutality.
Well, give us a description then of what that response was.
Well, there were numerous incidents in which security and military forces attacked Ogoni villages under a pretext, as was told to the troops, that they were repelling invaders from Cameroon, a neighboring African country, or in fact they were helping to keep peace between the Ogoni and the Andoni, another neighboring minority ethnic group. Troops were dispatched into the area and effectively committed, they pillaged villages inhabited by the Ogonis. I think the figures that we have were as high as 1,000 people, 1,000 Ogonis being killed in 1993 as a result of government security force raids on their villages. There were numerous rapes carried out in the process of this response by the Nigerian military, essentially to Shell's appeal for protection of its facilities in the area.
You describe the movement's activities as peaceful. Shell Oil has said that they lost $40 million to sabotage. Do you have any evidence that that is true?
Well, I think I cannot I can't say anything about the claim in terms of dollar amount. suffice it to say that in the face of the kind of outrages committed by the security forces, there were acts of violence committed by Ogonis, directed both to physical facility, Shell property, and also human life.
What was Shell Oil supposed to do when MOSOP was demonstrating and protesting and even trespassing on their land? Who were they supposed to call, if not the government?
Well, I think they could have sat down and had reasonable discussions with MOSOP in response to their issues. If, in fact, they felt compelled to call for government security protection, when that military force came on the scene and then engaged in a pogrom against the Ogoni people, Shell had a responsibility at that juncture to speak out publicly and criticize the excessive use of force by the security forces at the time. Shell was silent.
When did Shell Oil leave?
they decided to withdraw from Ogoni Land in mid-1993, and I think, in fact, that's when the greater proportion of damage to their facilities took place after they had withdrawn from their operations there.
My guest is Richard Dicker, Associate Counsel for Human Rights Watch. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Richard Dicker is my guest, Associate Counsel for Human Rights Watch. We're talking about Nigeria. There was a multi-party election in 1993, and this was actually going on while some of the demonstrations were going on in Ogoni Land, the demonstrations led by Ken Saro-Wiwa. What kind of government does Nigeria have today as a result of those elections?
Nigeria has a military government that represents a small clique of military officers who came to power in November 1993 after the multi-party elections of June had been suppressed and a civilian government installed by a previous military president had been ousted by the General Abacha coup. It is, by any stretch of definition, a government that exists in opposition to the demonstrated opinion of Nigerian people.
The reports about the government led by General Sani Abacha is that it's a government of corruption, repression, economic mismanagement, drug trafficking, and a government that really is creating an even greater divide between the very wealthy and most of the Nigerian people who are rather poor. Is that a fair assessment of his government?
Well, our expertise extends to human rights practices. And commenting on that, it is clear that the human rights situation in the country has deteriorated dramatically in the 2 years that General Abacha has been in office. There are credible reports, of course, in terms of drug trafficking, corruption, Swiss bank accounts that certainly fit the picture of a military government that has ruthlessly suppressed its own people for its own interests. Yeah.
Getting back then to the story, and again, there's several chapters. Getting back to Ogoni Land, in May of 1994, four Ogonis with ties to the Abacha government were murdered. Were actually burned alive. Saro-Wiwa was charged with their murder and then condemned to die. Where was he during these murders?
He was not anywhere in the location of where the murders took place. And in the course of a large rally or demonstration, and there was never any allegation that he was present at the scene. The murders of those four individuals, however unfortunate those actions were, and indeed they were unfortunate, became the pretext for the Nigerian military regime to arrest Ken Saro-Wiwa and a number of other activists within MOSAP and begin the process that led to their execution.
Saro-Wiwa was arrested along with eight other Ogonis.
Correct.
What kind of trial was it?
Well, they were tried by a special military tribunal, which had been authorized by several regulations implemented by the military governments. There was no semblance of respect for due process or international and Nigerian protections for defendants on trial for capital crimes. It became impossible for Saro-Wiwa's lawyers to introduce into court evidence that cast doubt on the credibility of a principal prosecution witness. The lawyers were prevented from meeting with their clients, and ultimately, in protest against the unfairness of the process at this special military tribunal, the lawyers withdrew from the case.
Saro-Wiwa was hanged along with eight other Ogonis last Friday. What do you think the effect has been on the country. What do you think the government's message was to the people of Nigeria?
Well, the message was, you step out of line and we will execute you. They wanted to send that signal very, very, very clearly. There are reports that have appeared in the press that the initiative for carrying out the sentence in the face of worldwide condemnation was the need on General Abacha's part to project a tough image so as not to encourage any coup plots against him. So there was a plan to send the message that you step out of line, you raise these kinds of issues and questions about multinational oil companies and their role in the country and their relationship with the military government, and this is the fate you can expect.
Are there other protest groups, civil rights groups that are active at all?
Nigeria has had over the years a very dynamic and vibrant civil society composed of lawyers groups, workers organizations, trade unions, an opposition press. And over the last few years, virtually every sector of that civil society has been intimidated, arrested, facing one or another kind of punitive measure by the government. So Nigerian civil society, which has played a vitally important role, has been weakened by the human rights violations of the Abacha regime.
Nigeria has been condemned for these executions by the Commonwealth, by a number of countries, Nelson Mandela. Several countries have withdrawn their embassies. The World Bank has canceled a $100 million loan. Does the outside world have any kind of pressure input into Nigeria?
I think it does. The condemnation has been impressive. It's you mentioned the Commonwealth countries, European Union, the International Finance Corporation of the World Bank, various governments recalling their ambassadors, etc. Those are important steps. They make a difference. Nigeria's lifeline economically is its oil export. There is serious effort underway to analyze the potential and viability for an oil embargo of Nigeria. I don't think there are adequate results from that yet, but Nigeria is subject to outside international pressure, and it needs to be ratcheted up in a way that isolates the Abacha military regime.
How invincible would you say Sonny Abacha is, General Sonny Abacha? And if outsiders, either companies or governments, were to freeze assets, would that have any effect on those in power?
Well, the assets that we have proposed freezing are, first and foremost, their personal assets around the world. Money that they have squirreled away in Swiss bank accounts, homes that they own in Europe and elsewhere. That would certainly send a very stinging message to these generals and their cronies that there is some accountability for their actions.
What do you want Shell Oil to do in 1995 in response to what happened?
Several things. First, publicly and privately condemn the executions that occurred. Shell has yet to make any definitive statement about the nature of the executions that took place. Its statement last week effectively warned against any outside public protest, saying that Shell preferred quiet diplomacy. Well, in this instance, quiet diplomacy has proven to be a stunning failure, and I think more accurately, a self-serving rationalization for doing nothing. Shell has a role to play publicly denouncing what happened, privately using its influence, and in particular, yesterday, there was an important meeting in Nigeria of the joint venture partners for a huge natural gas liquefaction program, or rather plant, that will go online in several years that will cost roughly $4 billion. Shell owns 24% equity in that project. That project financially is very important to the Abasha regime, and we had issued a public letter to Shell, to Elf, and to AGIP, French and Italian oil companies involved in this same project, to express their unwillingness to go forward unless certain substantial, tangible human rights improvements took place.
I guess the question is, and I'm sure the challenge from many of the companies is what responsibility do we have for a government? We're a business. We're a company. And a government is something different.
Indeed. And we are not so naive to mistake that important difference. But our point is that these are businesses that have an important stake in the country, that have influential connections and contact with officials in the government in producing a product that is critical to the government's continued financial stability, and can privately and publicly make their views known, not on domestic political issues, but on issues of human rights, universally protected human rights importance. So in the instance of Shell, there was some more direct complicity working with the military regime, we believe, in suppressing what was initially peaceful protest by the Ogoni people. I think Shell has a great deal to answer for and cannot simply say we're a private entity, we're not a government. Shell has responsibility for bringing the military into the picture back in 1993 that, again, led to the whole chain of events that we're here discussing.
Richard Dicker is Associate Counsel for Human Rights Watch. I'm Marty Moscowane, and this is Fresh Air.